Hello and welcome to the FBZ show. We have a mouth-watering show today. We have so much to talk about, so many talking points from the Portland EPRI. And with me, as always, to discuss everything is Mr. Jack Pickering and Edward Hunter. How are we, boys?
Yeah, hi Jack. Happy birthday. It's been a good few weeks, and Portland was definitely interesting. I'd just like to say I loved the Jakarta EPRIs, and so if you're wondering what side of the fence I'm on about this race, I'm not giving anything away yet.
There we go. For me, though, I'm sorry that we didn't do a Jakarta one, because I don't know why. I think just life got in the way. And time, you know, when you're like, you just 1 week rolls into another week, and it was like, it's race week, and then you just completely forget. But we have been working quite hard at Formula E Zone HQ on the next issue of our magazine, which hopefully will be released in early July time. So fingers crossed on that. So maybe that kind of caught us off a bit off guard with the show. But obviously, we did have Aisha there, and she did an amazing job providing us with all the interviews and so forth. So that was great. But yeah, Portland, that's what we're getting stuck into. Ed, how are you though first?
Mostly okay. It's only my ego that's been bruised today. But I really hope you had a great birthday, Jack. And I genuinely mean that. And I agree with you about Aisha. She did an amazing job in Jakarta. And I'm hoping by your expression, I could just see in the corner of my screen that I don't sound completely like Davros on steroids right now. So
we're delighted that we can hear you, Ed, loud and clear, all the way from
wherever
you live.
Compromises have been made. Compromises have been made and are being made.
We don't know what Ed's like doing to the camera at the moment. Oh. He's using an external camera, so if he's putting the middle finger up to you all, we do sincerely apologise.
Yeah. So, but anyway, right, let's talk Formula E, because for me, we'll forget the result for 2 seconds. We all know the result. If you're listening to this, you know the result. You know Nick Cassidy won. But I think the talking point is, was it a good race? People were like, this is the best race Formula E has ever produced. And some people were like, that is one of the worst races that Formula E has ever produced. And it's a bit like Marmite. And I really, really, really want you guys listening, whether you're on YouTube, whether you're on your Spotify app listening to us, I want you to get involved. I want you to try and get involved. Message us. We want to know your opinion on the Portland EPRI race, because it has divided so many chat rooms since the race, since the checkered flag fell. And I know we all have slightly different opinions, but I think on it from ourselves, but we kind of want to keep it as balanced as possible. So I'm going to throw to Ed first, right? So let's break it down a little bit in terms of this pack racing mentality, right? What did you think of the pack racing? Because obviously we've seen it before in Berlin and so forth. And that was the first kind of extreme that we saw, because the track was wide. Obviously, Portland was so wide that we were seeing 4 or 5 cars wide. And in terms of the people leading the race and not wanting to lead the race, we saw it have such a dramatic effect in Portland. For you, was it a good race? Did you think this was a really good race?
I think I had a fun time with the spectacle, but I don't think that's the same as it being a good race, if I'm being honest. And it's sort of been a running theme since, I think, Brazil, actually, in Sao Paulo, where we had another energy-sensitive race that, funnily enough, Nick Cassidy very nearly won. And that, to me, felt like another one where nobody wanted to lead, even though it was still quite a while. It had a lot of straights, that track. It was quite wide, but it wasn't quite to the same extent as Portland. And there were a couple of moments where they were going 5 wide, almost 7 wide at some points. And it did seem a little bit kind of, and I think the quote that stays in my mind is Sergio Sete Câmara after the race said, if you overtake 5 guys in one straight, to me, that's not proper racing, because they all just backed off and you just kept your foot down and there was no skill needed there. So I suppose it's an interesting debate in terms of what's caused this type of racing. Is there any kind of solution before the end of the season? What's too much? Is it everything is free for all? Everyone doesn't want to be in the lead, and then the last 10 laps are suddenly everyone suddenly speeds up and goes 6 or 7 seconds faster. And does that make the product look ridiculous? Does winning still mean something? I think these are all really important questions. I realize I just answer your question with loads and loads of questions, which is not ideal.
But, yeah, but that's anyway. What we're going to get stuck into, right? Because basically lots of sub questions come up, right, within both sides of the argument of was it not a good race or was it a good race? And that's what we're going to sort of go into. And that's why I really, really want people to get involved in the comment section and tell us what you thought and why. And then listening to what we're going to say and what we discuss. And Fee, do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Because I think the conversation for this race is huge in terms of where we could go and why people have their views on it. Pico, I know what your views are, and I'll let you explain your views. But I want to ask you a question before we start, because I know you are not the biggest fan. You kind of hinted that you prefer the Jakarta race to this race. And I want to ask you about those last 10 laps, though, right? Because those last 10 laps, when the pace, when Ed said, was picked up, would you consider that part of the race being good? Or would you consider that it didn't matter because of what happened before?
I mean, the last 10 laps were fine, but I'll be honest, I was still quite miffed about the first 22 laps or so. It was the pace was just absolutely ridiculous. You aren't racing if you're in the lead and you want to let like three or four cars past you because it's better for the race. That's not racing. That's a Sunday cruise. That's genuinely my opinion on it. If the battle was between first and 20th, and the battle was for fourth for the first 20 laps. That's genuinely what it was. The last 10 laps were fine, but
let's stay because what's interesting, so those first 20 laps, now I had the same kind of feeling at this point to you, right, in terms of I know we had two safety car periods, but that first sort of like 20 laps before, you know, they went fast for those last 10 laps in that 32 lap race, it wasn't racing, because for me racing, you want to be at the front, right? And if we're having a series, Ed, and I'll throw to this unit next, we've got a product where drivers openly admitting, I don't want to be in the lead of the race, right? And slowing down on the straight. We saw it at Monaco. Yeah. We've seen it everywhere. Berlin. Most tracks, they've slowed down at an overtaking point, and then drivers don't want to overtake. We get to the stage where they're that's why they're four or five wide going into a corner potentially. They don't want to take the lead. And so we're in this holding pattern. And the holding pattern takes so long, right, to get going. But then at the same time, Ed, to go to the other side of the argument, watching it was a bit crazy, because it was like a lap one start, like a race start every time they got to the first corner, and you didn't know who was going to be in the lead. You didn't know who was going to be where. And every lap, the order kept changing. And from an excited point of view, right, you didn't know what was going on, right? And that was the thrill part of it. So those people who say it was a good race, they're probably going to that thrill side of things where they're like, actually, I didn't know what was going to happen next. I didn't know what was, you know, where we were going to be, who's going to be in the lead, how many places had dropped back. It was like a horse race. It was like a Grand National where some guy's at the front, and the next, after a couple of hurdles, he's right there at the back, and then he's coming back through again. It had that kind of crazy thrill, which people like that thrill. That's why horse racing has such a big attraction. It's because it's got that thrill of, you know, everyone's close together, and there's things that change slightly during in each lap that changes the order.
Yeah, but I think especially in Portland, but we also saw it to a bit of an extent in Berlin and Sao Paulo, there was an artifice to it, right? And I think that's the thing that you and Pico, especially, and I think there are others in the FE panel that definitely agree with you, that really take issue with the fact that it's a result of the way the cars are set up. They're very high drag, so you can save so much energy from staying behind the car in front of you. And as a result, leading just isn't beneficial. Although saying that, I think Cassidy did lead quite a larger chunk of the race, but there was a few safety cars involved and sort of reasons behind that as well. Cassidy did start down in 10th and then slowly worked his way up the order. It's interesting because there was all the American fans were very, very into it, especially in Portland on site. The atmosphere sounded like it was very good from the people that we've talked to that were there. And it's people like, I don't want to say old grouchy people, but people like us that seem to be a bit more skeptical about it. And I suppose my hang up with it is more on the safety side in terms of, it's not really sustainable or healthy to have a race where people are running five wide, like constantly every lap, it feels like, because the consequence is people get pushed out. And we had a few big near misses. I think Nico Müller being the most obvious one that comes to mind, where his front wing got damaged because he just ran to back of someone at turn one. And then it went under the car and he just went straight on and caused a big accident, 27G accident, and then a safety car where he just went right onto the racing line. And I feel like it's the sort of incident that could happen again with this style of racing if we go back to Portland, say, next year. I think Rome and London are probably going to be less energy sensitive, to put it that way. But I do think it's an issue with the formula that we have at the moment. And we kind of got lucky so far that we haven't had a massive, massive accident with these energy sensitive races. But there's a couple of times where people lost front wings and it's rubbed against the front tires, and we've had big near misses. Tictum and Günther in Monaco is another one that comes to mind to me. So I think what you're saying is really important about the show, but also safety, I think, is really important as well, and as well as sporting integrity.
We'll delve into the safety side of it in a moment. So going back, I kind of want to go back to that horse racing kind of analogy, because and throw this to you, Pico, we don't see it in normal racing, right? We don't, when we watch a motorsport event, right? And we've been watching motorsport events for decades now, because we're getting older. But you know, when you watch a horse race, you know it's that one lap around that course, right? And you know what to expect, right? That kind of to and fro is expected, right? Whereas it's not expected in a motorsport event, which makes it more unique in terms of Formula E being able to have these chopping changes. And I suppose maybe for people, you know, who are criticizing that race, it's because it's not the norm for them. They don't expect to turn on a race and see people, you know, not want to be in the lead. So for them, they're like, what am I watching?
Yeah, I don't think there's any other motor racing series in the world where you don't want to lead the race. And that's something that I'm not sure whether it's just because I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to motor racing.
The only thing, just to add in, sorry to interrupt. I want to throw MotoGP, because I know you're a massive MotoGP fan.
I was about to mention that. Moto3.
But not even Moto3, right? I won't even go MotoGP, right? Forget Moto3, because I know Moto3 is very packed as well, but I want to go Mugello, right?
Now, Mugello. This is exactly what I was going to say.
Mugello has that long straight.
Yeah.
Even in MotoGP, I remember Marc Marquez and people behind it waiting for that last lap. So,
yeah, Marquez Lorenzo 2016.
Yeah, we can see it in other motorsports. That's what I wanted to say. So maybe for some people, we do kind of see at that point, you know, you don't want to lead until those last two or three laps. But carry on with your point.
Yeah, but even then, in things like Moto3, which is, if you haven't watched Moto3, it's basically you get every single race. In and around anything from about 3 to 12 bikes fighting for the lead race in, race out, which sounds quite familiar. But even then, in Moto3, you still want to, if you're leading the race, that's still a good thing. Whereas in Formula E, if you're leading the race, that's a very bad thing, and that's the problem. Because even though it's more like a cycling peloton, and that's what there's been a lot of these comparisons, because you're basically punching that hole in the air and everything, and it means that all the other riders are saving energy. They're not going as quick, but they can still be in touch, and that's what we're getting in Formula E. Whereas in something like Moto3 or in MotoGP or anything like that, even if you sit behind someone, That's fine. You might get a hotter engine. That's about it. It's being in front or being behind, it doesn't really matter in motorcycle racing. unless you're in Moto 3 and it's the last corner of the last lap of Mugello. That's the only other time that you need to be sort of worried, because I don't go to Brno anymore. But yeah, it's this kind of not wanting to lead is, and we will go into it in a bit about how dangerous it is, because I'm fairly certain we were close to some accidents in that race. But one thing that made me think about this during the race is because I watch YouTube. I've seen plenty of F1 YouTubers, and they've done videos where it's like, oh, 10th place wins, so you have to finish 10th at the end of the 3-lap race, and that's the winner. And that's what Formula E is at the moment. It is literally, they could have awarded 10th place 25 points, and you would have the same style of racing for the entire race, because it's just ridiculous like that at the moment. In my own honest, humble opinion, this style of racing, I like the fact that it's close.
Yeah, I think...
But it's dangerous.
Yeah, we're going to touch on the dangerous side. And I see both of you, right? Just on the... It's like on the tip of your tongue. It's like, ah, I really want to stay
you
this.
You can't see me.
Well, I will.
Oh, that's true.
But I know it's on the tip of your tongue. And I know I kind of like suggested we want to like go through this slowly. We don't want to... Because people's opinions on this are strong. Strong why they liked it. And in terms of the dangerous side of things, not... really thinking about it. And then some people were like you, Pico, where they're like, oh my god, the risk factor of these kind of races is so high. So there's people like, well, nothing happened, so we're okay. And there's people like, well, something could have happened, and we're gonna dive into that in 2 seconds, I promise, right? But what I want to do now,
show my age now that I've gone from the something could have happened but it didn't, and now I'm going, oh god, something could have happened.
I'm not saying that people who may have liked that race may have been watching motorsport for years, right? And I just think lately motorsport has kind of changed its perception, and we'll get into that. But what I want to do first is I want to hear from some of the drivers, right? I'm going to hear now from Sergio Sette Câmara, and we're going to also hear from Lucas Degrassi. So we're going to just jump and hear from both of them. And I want to kind of talk about what they said, because it was quite contrasting and a little bit surprising as well. What they said and how they were quite contrasting. So first, we're going to listen to Sergio Sette Câmara, and then second, we'll listen to Lucas Degrassi.
Yeah, I think it's going to become a fashion now in Formula E. As a driver, I mean, if it is good for the sport, then fair enough. If people are finding it entertaining, fair enough. But it's not. We're not racing out there. It's more of a. It's a different thing. Maybe it's just a matter of getting used to it and finding the positive things about it, but it just feels like some artificial kind of racing. The overtakes are not really over. You cannot have a race where you overtake 5 guys in one straight. You know, for me, this is not very natural. It's more of a become more of a game show than a race. But it's not that bad in other races. It was more the case here in Portland. I think in Rome and London, it will be more of a natural racing. I've enjoyed my trip here to the U.S. I've really liked Portland as a city. I'd like to see that also the grandstands were full. There were a lot of people around. And I'm looking forward to come back here next year.
And overall, when it comes to the racing, as you mentioned, it just felt unnatural overall. Do you think it's something where maybe like a couple of chicanes, or is it just because this is a road course compared to a street course?
I think they tried to add too many laps to the race. This makes our energy target too low. And then drivers have to save so much energy. And then this causes this peloton effect. Another issue as well, I think the way the car was designed, there's too much drag. So the advantage you have from driving behind another car is way too big. So they should design a car which the advantage from driving behind the other one is not that much. And then that would not incentivize this peloton style racing. So it's a bit of both, two things.
Yeah, it was actually a good weekend for us with scoring 6 points, finishing P7 now with the last penalty. So I'm very happy. The team has improved in performance, and hopefully we can continue this with this momentum for the next round.
And of course, the next round will be on the street courses. Here, it was very wide. We saw a lot of five wide, even four wide, going to the backstretch. Was this something where qualifying wasn't too big of a concern? Now we go back to where qualifying is going to be very important for the Rome and London?
Yeah, the qualifying becomes more important in Rome and London. But this is like a very extreme race, very different. And in qualifying, matter, but not that much. Yes.
And last question, we know Portland is one of the more greener cities, electric cars, a lot of them here, and you have a long involvement with Formula E. Overall, we consider this like a big success because we had a sold-out crowd. Crowd was just cheering and just seemed like overall a big win for Formula E.
This impressed me a lot, that with the crowd was here and the fans and the everybody was super excited with the race, and I really look forward to coming back here next season. And I think before maybe it was a bit of a doubt, is Portland going to be good or not? Now we proved that the racing here was amazing and the crowd was great, so very happy to come back.
For me personally, I was so happy that Sergio Seta Câmara said what he said. I love that quote in terms of it being a game show, because for the show, for those casual fans potentially, right, it could go one of two ways, because it is thrilling, it is exciting. And that kind of goes to this game show thing, which Formula E have always tried to do. You think with the fan boost, you think with the attack mode, there's always something to try and enhance the show, right? And make Formula E look different and look interesting. And that this pack racing element adds to that show. But then Sergio Seta Câmara there as a race driver is like, you know, these aren't overtakes. You know, this isn't racing. Right. So he's like, what are we doing? Are we creating a racing that is just for the show, but it's not really racing? It's kind of some artificial thing to look thrilling on TV. Or are we trying to make a, it's hard to use the word real series or a serious series in a sense where we go racing, like we don't just do things to make it look exciting in air quotes. What are your views on that, Ed?
Yeah, because one of the things that Sergio also mentions in that interview is he talks about the distance not really working. That he said that that because it was 28 laps, and obviously that's not including the interruptions because of the safety car, that just meant they're in this situation where they had a very, very low, I think it was, did you say low energy target? I think he meant high energy target, because it means you have to save more energy. But that just puts him in a situation where the most wise option strategically is, like we say, to slow behind one another. And I think there's an element of fans that don't really know any different, maybe don't or they just like seeing some action, they don't care about the context too much. But I think for a lot of people that I don't know about you guys, when I was watching it just felt really overwhelming at points, like I didn't really know what on earth to focus on. And I think there are a couple of shock results, like Robin Fryans, who was a very good driver, was able to sneak into 10th place in the end. And I sort of felt like if we didn't have this Peloton star racing, then there would have been no opportunity for that to happen, because the Apt and the Mahindra of Degrassi as well is another good example. I don't think they're anywhere near efficient enough in a, because it was Peloton star racing, it kind of leveled the playing field to an almost unnecessary, surreal sort of degree, if that makes sense. So I think from an integrity point of view, it does slightly undermine the, oh, only the most efficient powertrain. No, it's a driver that basically just goes at the right point, essentially, when everyone's slowing down for the first 20, 15 laps or so.
Something that Nick Cassidy is very good at, and it seems like Nick Cassidy and Jake Dennis is timing when to go, and we'll get onto that towards the end of the show, but that's something that Nick Cassidy has proven this series in these types of races. He's quite good at predicting like when to go, and because he knows when to go at the right time, that's basically put him where he is currently in the championship, leading it. Pico, well, your
one
views
point
on...
away from leading it.
Oh, 1 point away. Apologies. Yeah, Jake Dennis is still ahead. Mr. Pickering, what do you think? What did you make on Sergio's comments?
Honestly, yeah, I'm a big fan of Sergio's comments.
No wonder,
yeah,
right?
No. Believe it or not, do you know what I thought? Do you know, I woke up this morning and thought, do you know what, Lucas has got a great thought. No, I love you, Lucas.
Well, at least somebody in this school does.
Yeah, no. But I'll be honest, the style of racing that we're getting in this, if you're enjoying this racing, you loved season 7 where there was 18 drivers fighting for the championship. It's they're very similar. They're, it's different, but they're the same kind of, because you've got this like weird, wacky championship fight in season 7 where if you're towards the back of the field, you do better. Whereas in this, whereas nowadays, as long as you're not right at the front, you're going to do very well at the end of the race, and that's what it is. And the fact that they were doing it, so, thankfully, our colleagues at eFormula News/eFormula D, depending on
the German guys,
if you speak German or not.
Yeah, our very good friends.
They've got a they've tweeted out a lovely little graph that is that's on my other screen, where basically on lap 20 they were doing 1:19 to 1:20s. On lap 23, they were doing 72-second laps. Within a space of two or three laps, they decided to drop the pace by 6 or 7 seconds, because
Trend
out at that point.
It was a similar trend in Monaco, but you couldn't get the pack style racing as much in Monaco because of the space, right? Because we saw the same thing. Because it was 1:38. Then by the end, in that 5-6 lap sprint, they were in the 1:32s, 1:33s. So you could see the pace difference. And we spoke to the drivers, you know, you're around Monaco and you're going 6 seconds faster than you were a lap ago. Like, your reference points all change. You've been chilling around for like 10 laps, doing a 1:38, 1:35, 36s, you know, in between those. And then all of a sudden, bam, you're 4 seconds, 5 seconds faster. Your reference points for each corner changes. So it makes that skill level really interesting. But Pico, I'm going to stay with you before I go to it. Were you surprised by Lucas Degrassi? Because Lucas Degrassi seemed quite cheerful. He actually said he called it great racing, like it was a great race. Like, were you surprised? Because Lucas is kind of one of those who kind of looks further into the distance normally, right? And sees things in many different ways. But he said it was a good race. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, six one half dozen of the other. With Lucas, we know what he's like. He's very kind of like he will have his opinion and he will stick to it, and I respect the hell out of him for that. But yeah, I understand like if people who enjoyed Portland want to have a go at me, by all means do. I still love you.
We want all the comments in the comment section.
And I completely understand why you liked it. It was a very crazy, wacky race. It's just it doesn't appeal to me, and I just don't I just can't get my head around how this is being deemed as racing for me. And so I do get there is a little bit of me going, I would have thought Lucas would have been a little bit like, yeah, no, this is a little bit crazy. But the thing is, Lucas is a huge advocate of Formula. He always has, always will. And so I understand why he's kind of like bumping it up. Just be like, look at this. We got 400 overtakes in the race. For me, 400 overtakes, if you're just letting six people through on a straight, that is not an overtake. I'd say even as much as like 70% of the overtakes that happened in that race were lift off and let people through.
I think probably more than 70%. But it goes back to that game show element, right? Of Formula E say, oh yeah, we had 400 overtakes. It was great. And, you know, best racing series ever and so forth that they do. And I don't think that helps them sometimes, because they're like, oh yeah, look at us, we're so brilliant. But then the drivers go, yeah, but, you know, they weren't even proper racing. So it contradicts that point. You know, Formula E put this message out there, yeah, we had 116 overtakes or whatever it was at Monaco, right? But some of them were just lifting coast ones where it didn't really actually matter. There wasn't actually an overtake where you went, wow, well, one overtake. And I suppose then it gives us this full sense that Formula E is such a overtake-friendly series when actually it's not. But I want to now, boys, you bit your lips so much. Because we've got to talk
about...
You're
going to come together in harmony now.
Yeah. So you talked about the dangerous side of things, and this is what split a lot of people. And I'll come to you on that first, because you brought this up first. And I know we've kind of heard your opinions on it. For me, right, I feel like motorsports changed, and this is the sort of messages we've seen. So we've seen in Formula One, if we make a decision now, like, we have to go back to Jules Bianchi, because the Jules Bianchi incident changed Formula One massively. We now have the halo. It changed the whole of motorsport. But the way Formula One act now in certain situations, obviously they wouldn't have thrown a red flag during the Portland E-Prix because of potential dangerousness, but they could have maybe foreseen this happening, and maybe they might have made different changes to what Formula E have done. Because, for example, heavy rain now, you know, we'll never ever see a Nürburgring 2007 ever again, where cars start spinning off and crashing. Or we'll never see like that happening in Silverstone 2008 or Japan 2014 on that fateful day, because it was dangerous. So now they put a red flag out much earlier. You know, they don't wait for a crash. The red flag or the safety car is out to prevent said crash, right? And in Formula E, it just felt like at any moment when they were five wide, four wide, we were walking into a potential aeroplane crash. And the only thing that was stopping it, on my opinion, is the skill of the driver. So we were putting all our eggs in the baskets of the drivers, if for me, if that makes sense. Because if we didn't, well, if this is the only thing we did, right? Because we did, we put our eggs in that basket. Because if they didn't crash, we got away with it. You know, there's no danger, right? We survived. What do you make on that, Ed?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it's a bit of a mentality kind of thing. And not to criticize Scott Elkins too much, he's very strict, but I felt a couple of times this season, not even in just energy-sensitive races, like Hyderabad comes to mind, where there was just loads of debris on track and a safety car wasn't thrown until one of the debris got stuck, hit Jake Hughes's wing mirror, got it stuck in the steering wheel and forced him to locked him into the wall, essentially. And then was out on like the apex on the racing line. And of course, with Portland, that you could sort of see it coming and, like you say, just narrowly being avoided. Like, there's one moment where Jev's race essentially was ruined because he got up to, I think, fourth or fifth, and then was pushed onto the grass, essentially. And because he went onto the grass, he avoided any serious collision. But yeah, it wouldn't have taken much for it to go wrong. So you've got to say full credit to the entire field. And we only needed two safety cars, one because Mary's car shut down and the other because of Nico Müller's front wing going under, like I mentioned earlier, going under his car. But yeah, it feels like the mentality, I think, definitely needs to change a bit in Formula E, like you were talking about with Jules Bianchi. And it's not the case in like every wet race. The moment there's a drop of white rain, the safety car comes out, because there are a couple of people, I think, who do overstate it a little bit. But certainly we don't just flat out race in monsoon conditions in F1. And to use another F1 comparison, I think there are a lot of people who say, well, in F1 you have to save the Pirelli tires because they're quite either heat sensitive or they wear out very quickly and drop off the cliff. And I think that's a bit different to Formula E, because A, people saving tires for 60 odd laps tends to be quite boring and not with people overtaking each other. Whereas then they tend to be quite close to each other. Whereas in Formula E, if you're saving energy to that extent, it does end up like we got the pack so close together. And that makes contact, in my view, almost inevitable. And we did see it with Fenestraz twice in the race, come to think of it, where he pit for a new front wing. There was a safety guy caught right to the back of the pack and he saved the energy and then lost his front wing again. So it really... a rookie like Fenestraz can be caught. And Fenestraz is a very, very good driver, got pole position in Cape Town as well. So I think that really shows that as good as these drivers are, you're sort of almost like Russian roulette. You're pushing your luck to a certain extent with this kind of racing. And I think Portland showed you can't just look at the outcome. You've got to look at the situations that led to that outcome. And I think we had a couple of near misses.
Yeah, and so Pico, what's your thoughts in terms of the safety element side of things?
Yeah, it's it was an interesting I every time when they came down that bank, that curve back straight into the little chicane before you head onto the front straight, because it tightened up so much as you kept on going further down that straight, and it started six riders, five riders, and so, and like you could see the pinch point coming, and I was like, it's scarier than some episodes of Doctor Who with like some stuff that was going to happen.
I don't care if it's scariness of Doctor Who because then it's not that scary.
Yeah, but oh, yeah, no.
Orphan 55, Pico.
Oh no! Oh yeah, no. Oh.
It was Earth all along.
Benny. Anyway. No. Yeah. Yeah. It was. It was very. Yeah. It was. I was kind of like, there were points where I was very close, like watching it through the fingers in my eyes. Fingers in my eyes. Whatever the
back of the sofa
is.
I think is the expression you're looking for.
Yeah.
Because so yeah, I was fully expecting a big old accident, and I think we're very lucky that the only accident that we got out of the pack racing was that Fenestras.
And Nico Müller as well.
Losing his front wing. Well, Nico Müller, yeah, he kind of crashed on by himself, but yeah.
But
that's because the front
is,
wing went under the car because he hit someone at turn one.
But let's say, Nico Müller's accident could have gone way much worse. And that's the potential of pack racing. Let's say he survives that corner and it falls off going into that, and he can't stop. There's no brakes. He said the brakes gone. So he can't brake into that corner, right? Which I probably wouldn't. It would probably be a bit of a lift, but he's got no control at that point. If he can't stop, there's three or four cars he could have wiped out, right? And then you've got that aeroplane crash. John Eric Verne, as you said, he went on the grass and he manages to get it back in control, slows the car down, and he lives to fight another day. He doesn't touch a soul. How he doesn't touch a soul, I don't know. The grass slowed him down enough, thankfully, for him not to touch anyone. But if those two situations went any differently, how many cars could they have knocked out? What could have happened? Could we have had a car flip over each other? You know, I guess that's what the halo's there for, to protect them. But then do we have a different outlook on this pack mentality? Are we that one crash away from going, actually, this is dangerous? Because we've got away with it, and we've got away with it in Berlin, you could say that the Stoffel Vandoorne, Dan Tinkham, and the mayhem that happened behind was technically due to pack racing, because they're all shuffling for position. Dan Tinkham forces Stoffel Vandoorne out while we have a crash, right? But you might just say, oh no, that's just Dan Tinkham forcing another driver into the wall. But because there's, but if they were a bit more spread out, they wouldn't collect two other cars because they're all so close. So you've got that side of it as well. So, you know, was the pack mentality racing? Okay, yes, Dan Tinkler made a mistake, you could argue, and did, you know, shut the door a little bit. I'm not putting all the blame on Dan. But because of how close they were, Ed, that did cause the accident. And we could have had another bigger accident in Portland because of how wide they went.
Exactly, and I really hope we don't see it because of the walls, we don't see it on street circuits. But I do worry slightly if a Nico Müller style crash on a circuit we've got spectators much closer to the walls could be a really dangerous thing. Obviously, the catch facing the safer barriers do their job as they should. But yeah, it's telling something when even Dan Tinkham come out of after Portland says basically he thought the racing was just dangerous and he was just waiting for an accident to happen in front of him. And I think he should know. He speaks from experience, but yeah, sorry, I'm sounding a bit harsher than usual on Dan. Yeah, I agree. I think the danger is going to be an element of this style of racing, and I think that accident we're talking about in Berlin, that did happen for very, very similar reasons, where there was just miscommunication between two drivers saving energy and one got caught out and pushed over in the wall.
So suppose from me though, I know we say it's dangerous, right? And people, you know, will argue, you know, these are the best, well, some of the best racing drivers in the world. They should be able to handle and not crash into each other, making it a spectacle. Therefore, it's not that dangerous. But then, you know, mindset. It's what I mean. It's like, it's that catch 22, moving on, thinking, well, yeah, but something could have happened. And then because it happened, you know, we have a completely different outlook on this style of racing. And then if it had happened, then we start questioning so many things. And I think, if we had seen a major incident where someone got hurt, someone had to go to hospital, would Gen 3 have been a bad idea to start without attack charge? Because it's really clear Now, for those of you who can't remember, attack charge is this 30-second pit stop where they would come in, stop for 30 seconds, get a recharge, and go out again, which would have completely, we would have never, if it came in to stop, we would have never seen these packed races, because it wouldn't have been Formula E, because they would have had enough energy to do it. And then they would have had to save here and there strategy-wise in order to, you know, when to stop, overcut, undercut. We would have had all of those kind of strategy elements thrown into the race. Whereas we wouldn't have seen what they're doing quite what they're doing now, because really the car, Ed, is not built for 45 minutes. Not even for, in some races, it's not even 45 minutes. We don't get to 45 minutes without them running out of charge. So my question is, and you can disagree with me, and I think a lot of people will, but I want people to disagree with me or maybe agree with me if you think actually you've got a point there. Should Formula E have gone with attack charge, with Gen 3, without attack charge, because it could have created these types of races that we've seen and the inevitability of a crash, which we haven't had, but we could have had in terms of safety? Should we have delayed the launch of Gen 3 for 1 year so it was attack charge was ready and we rolled it out all together in one complete compact package?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things we're worried about pre-season wasn't there was the big supply chain issue as well. We're getting parts for the Gen 3 car ready, and that was a big scare at pre-season testing, teams not having enough spares and stuff. We even saw Günther have to sit out around in Saudi Arabia because he crashed in quali. But I think, if I'm being honest, the Gen 2 was a pretty old car by that point. It'd been going since end of 2018, hadn't it? And I think Jamie Regal, our outgoing CEO, that's another story that we haven't really covered too much, said it better. He said the Gen 2 car was a sort of outmoded sort of piece of technology, and he felt they needed to get Gen 3 in this season because they need to show off what it could do. And obviously, one of the things is that it going like 6 or 7 laps off the pace in this pack racing hasn't... We only get to see what we can do in like the very end of the race and also in qualifying when they get that extra power. So... I kind of feel seeing Gen 3 in action, despite some of the issues, is still worth it. But I agree that they're not having attack charges created this unintentional, and it's because the charging wasn't reliable enough. The technology just wasn't ready, and also the teams were really against a mid-season rule change. Porsche particularly, actually, and you know, Porsche as supplying Andretti as well. So Andretti would have had to go along with that as well, but. Yeah, I can understand that as well, because it's sort of, again, we're talking about credibility. It undermines credibility of your championship to change the rules mid-season in such a fundamental way to have that attack charge. And that's not to say, because it was optional, I still believe. The other thing about attack charge is you would get two extra extra 8 minutes of attack mode, I think, if you went into attack charge. So that meant as long as you did that, you would get more attack mode to use as well. Although... with the energy saving, it's debatable whether people are using attack mode to fall back in the pack rather than to actually just make places. Maybe with attack charge, it would have been different, like you say, Jack. But yeah, I feel like sticking with Gen 2 would have attracted way too much criticism that Formula E probably couldn't have afforded, especially at the end of Season 8 when people are already getting a bit tired of it. And there are other criticisms about the format, such as the cars just bumping into each other constantly and bits falling off, which seems to be a... Now, when people bump into each other, the front wing gets wedged under the car and they go flying, sadly. So it seems like there's no middle ground here that we can have.
No, I totally agree with some of your points there, Ed. Pico, what Which do you ones? Think? quite a lot of them, to be fair. I'll get into my views after I hear from Pico. Pico, what do you think? I know it's a bit of an outlandish claim there to say, well, if Gen 3 wasn't ready fully, that we shouldn't have gone with Gen 3 and we should have stuck with Gen 2. Do you agree with that, or do you think what we've seen from Gen 3, it was right to at least start it?
It was clear that the Gen 3 car was designed with the attack charge in mind, but if we didn't have Gen 3 this year, I think it might have just binned off the series. Like, because, yeah, as Ed said, we had that car for 4 years already, which was the longest Formula E car that we've ever had. Because the Gen 1 car got changed slightly halfway through its run, And the same thing was supposed to happen with Gen 2.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say, with the Gen 2 Evo. So if we had the Gen 2 Evo car, is there more scope for saying, all right, because we've had this Gen 2 Evo car, there's more scope to delay Gen 3 to Season 10 because it wasn't quite ready, or because we had that car so long, we had to just jump?
I think if we had the Gen 2 Evo, I think we could have stuck it out for another year with the Gen 2 powertrains. But it's many what ifs and buts and everything like that. And what happened was we went to Gen 3. It would have been weird not having Gen 3 this year. And yeah, the attack charge never really came to fruition for this year. But hopefully that's something that they're working behind the scenes and hopefully fixing for Season 10. And like the fact how both the Gen 1 and the Gen 2 did have successors, although we never saw it for the Gen 2 car, I'm hoping that they are working on something for Season 11 at the absolute latest. Honestly, I'd love to see something change between Season 9 and Season 10 to counteract the racing that we've seen this year. So the downforce package, the car, it's very slipstreamy and everything like that. And part of that's because the tyres are no longer covered. And so if we tweak the front wing a little bit to kind of cover the wheels a bit, I'd quite like to see that, because it might improve the racing for future. Obviously, they've probably got ideas for what I'm going to dub Gen 3 Evo, because it's probably going to be called that. I've got no idea. But for the evolution of the Gen 3 car, it's got to come by Season 11, absolute latest. I'd quite like it to come in for this year, just to change something, because right now it's not good. And I think attack charge would have meant that we didn't have races like this as well, because as both of you have alluded to, going through the pits, like they wouldn't all go through the pits on the same lap. That would have been pure carnage, and it would have broken up the packs. And so obviously Gen 3 was designed with attack charge in mind, but it's something we're not going to see it for the rest of this year. Hopefully it comes in Season 10, but
I think it needs to come in Season 10, right?
Because
again, we're going to Portland next year, and I just think these questions will be raised, and I'm sure the media, once we get to Rome, will be throwing these questions to the drivers again, and once we've had a bit of time to digest it. Because obviously, when drivers are speaking after the race, the emotions are still high. If you've done well in that race, it was a great race, you're not really thinking about that. You could have been swiped out at any moment. Probably during the race, you thought, I could get swiped out at any moment. But once you've had a good result, your whole mindset changes. Oh, yeah, I did really well today, So great race. And maybe with Lucas Grassi picking up points, maybe that kind of hindered his sway on that. I see both sides of the argument in terms of it being like a good race. I get the thrilling side of it. I must admit, I was just sat back. I couldn't write any notes. I don't even know how I wrote a race report because I didn't know where to start.
I gave up on Twitter in Berlin. I think I've mentioned it on this show before. It's just, for me, it's too hard to follow.
Yeah, but I will agree that I did semi-enjoy them coming down to turn one like it was the first lap every race and thinking who was going to be. I did kind of enjoy that, but I at the same time my brain was like, it's not racing, but it's kind of cool seeing it, but it's not racing. They're not racing, they're not racing, they're just moving about, and you're like, who's leading now? I might poo-poo technically on my own idea of this bidding off Gen 3 and keeping Gen 2, because I kind of agree with you boys in terms of, I think they needed that Gen 3 car. We needed to spruce up Formula E. We needed something. And the fact that attack charge wasn't ready, and, there was all this battery as well, braking issues that we saw with Nico Müller, just completely losing brakes. And earlier in the season, there was issues with the car, and you're just thinking, have we made the right choice? And I think seeing the cars for myself in Monaco for the first time, it is a spectacle. They do look cool. I must admit that. I just think we can't judge Gen 3 yet. And we can't, you know, we can't say, oh, this track's rubbish. And people can't also, you can't say that racing on open tracks like Portland is the way Formula E should go, because once Formula E gets to where it wants to be, these races will be non-existent anymore. You won't be going to Portland next year with a tack charge and seeing the same result. So I don't think we can judge how Gen 3 operates until next season. It's just, I feel like as a whole, and I think you'll agree, is I think this season we got away with one, because really Rome, I don't know, it's not going to be as wide, but it's a long track, Rome, but there's lots of stop start points where they can recover energy. London, they always are fine on energy. The track's too, I don't know.
I'm looking forward to London. Yeah. Because it's going to be an almost flat out race.
Yeah, because, you know, they have to reduce the energy capacity within the battery, like, for them to actually not run at full pelt. So I think we got away one. Portland was the last chance of a race like that, of this peloton style, you can say however you want, happening. So maybe we did get away with one, and that was the risk that we took. But because people might say they're the best drivers in the world, or some of the best drivers in the world, that, you know, they should avoid crashing into each other, that's what makes it part of the spectacle. And that I would agree with. But I just think we can't ignore the safety side of things. And I think, boys, you'd echo that statement. But we spoke about this for about an hour, and I told you it was a big talking point. Right? It was a big talking point I really feel needed to discuss. And I really, really, really want you guys who've been listening, because we have waffled on about this for a bit, and I know maybe we might edit it down slightly.
What do you mean, we?
Well, yeah.
Interesting use of the word we. Okay.
But have a great Friday night, Ed.
Yeah, thanks. But in terms of, you know, we've waffled on for a long time, so we're gonna stop it there, because I want to talk about two people before we end. And that is Nick Cassidy and Jake Dennis. Because despite everything, despite the Peloton style racing, despite everything that's been thrown at them this season, these two have risen to the top, right? Time after time after time. And, you know, Pascal Wöhlen, it led it. But, you know, even in that Peloton, you thought there was a chance of him with that late attack mode being able to do something and climb up. He couldn't do it. But Jake Dennis and Nick Cassidy find a way. And I think going into these last two events, it has to be between those two, right? Because I can't see, well, you don't know, because Nissan looked really good, but they couldn't put a race together. But the Porsche powertrain in the Andretti and the Jaguar with Nick Cassidy and the Jaguar so far, but they've been a bit away, but definitely with Nick Cassidy at this precise moment, are putting on a real show. And those two, you've got to say, what a season they've had, Ed.
Absolutely. I think Cassidy really impressed me with his consistency, and Dennis has now got some of that consistency himself. I felt really good to see Jake Dennis get on pole position, because I really felt he should have got on pole in Mexico, and they didn't let him change his front wing in qualifying. So Degrassi, of all people, stole the pole there. And yeah, Cassidy, I think whenever it comes to this Peloton style racing, Cassidy is always the most strategic. Little bit of luck in like places like Monaco, where he was leading when the safety car came out, so Evans couldn't get by him. But otherwise, I think Cassidy has really judged it to perfection. And Dennis even said after the race, if I hadn't been on pole, I think I could have won. Which on balance, I think you'd probably rather finish second and get the 3 points for pole rather than win and not be on pole, because I think overall you'd actually score less points, don't you? I think he probably would rather have won, wouldn't he? But I still think, considering there are some races where Dennis has just been taken out through no fault of his own, I think he'll be very, very happy with like 4 second places in a row. But surely another win has got to come to him soon if he wants to keep Nick Cassidy at bay, because Cassidy's just a machine at the moment. He just cannot stop scoring, it would seem, with the exception of that one race in Jakarta where him and Wöhlen collided. But other than that, cannot stop scoring.
For me, before we count out Mitch Evans and that chasing pack, Pico, because you've still got Rome. But Rome for Mitch is the last chance now. It's a place where Mitch goes well. But even if Jake Dennis and Nick Cassidy do well in Rome, you know, it looking like going into those final two races that it will be between Dennis and Cassidy as the most likely championship contenders going into those final two races.
Well, yeah, I was about to bring that up. Mitch Evans, Rome Masterclass last season. I will say Jev also won there in season 7, I think it was. And also, Nick Casti got his first ever pole in Rome in season 7. So, yes. And then we go to London, which is Jake Dennis's plaything, basically. He's just been on fire every time we've gone to the XL, and I don't expect it to be any different, really. I think Mitch will be in the hunt when we get to London, but I can't believe I'm saying this, but Ed Hunter called it in January. I genuinely
and you
think
laughed
at this point. Yeah, no, we did, because Porsche had an absolute shocker in Valencia, and it's come back to bite me and Jack in the arse. And because it's Rome, and then we head to London. Yeah, I we've only got 2 weekends left. I'm at both of them. I can't wait.
I'll join you in London as well. But yeah, for me, I think that both of them have done brilliant. Yeah, Mitch Evans and Wehrlein, who's still in it, by the way, in third. Mitch is in fourth. You know, so for Wehrlein as well, you've got to do well. You've got to do well in Rome if you want to have any chance of championship. Because, you know, Wehrlein, he could still pull it out if Nick and Jake have a bad result in Rome and Wehrlein puts it together. Then, you know, we could have a four-way fight very easily going into London. But it's looking like a two-way fight if Cassidy and Dennis just keep it clean. Boys, it's been one mammoth show with a lot of talking
you can
points.
Say that.
Yeah, it's been a mammoth show. And as I said, I really want you guys at home listening to comment, because a lot to digest, a lot of rubbish that we've probably spoken about and a lot that you maybe have disagreed or agreed with. Tell us. Right, because literally me, Pico, Ed will be in those comment sections, and we really, really, really want to hear what you have to say. And what if you agree, whether you disagree, whether you didn't think about it like that from something that we've said, or you thought about it like that, but you thought actually because they're good drivers, we shouldn't have to worry. And so forth. I really love to hear, because we've tried to be balanced. I think you can quite see that as a collective, we've erred on the side of caution more than the side of, well, nothing happened, so we're okay. And just because nothing happens, you know, I do agree you can't red flag a race because it looks dangerous with 5 cars wide. You know, you've got to trust the drivers that they're going to get through it, but it's one of those things. But boys, it's been an absolute privilege to share this mammoth podcast with you. We managed to get it out. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, no problem.
The problem with us, Jack, is that we all just like boring racing when nothing happens for 50 odd laps.
Yeah, that's why we're Formula One fans. We turn up, watch a Formula One race, know who's going to win, and just wonder what's going to happen and see if there's going to be any
nice, predictable
bits.
Race. I can sleep halfway through, wake
exactly.
up, and nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
I'll be honest. I kind of wanted to sleep halfway through Portland because I had work.
It was 1 a.m.
It was 1 a.m. for us.
I did sleep for an hour between qualifying and the race. So.
I had to be really quiet while commentating to keep everyone asleep. Yeah. If I'm gonna have to do it at the moment if we keep going much longer.
Yeah.
But anyway, right, but thank you so much for listening. We really, really, really want to hear your comments, whether you agree with us, disagree with us. Even if you disagree with us, we love it when you disagree with us, because it's more fun.
I will disagree with myself.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds normal. I've known you for a decade, that sounds exactly like you, Ed.
Perfect. Thank you so much for watching. We will see you very soon for another podcast. Goodbye.